This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It only takes 2 minutes of sheer horror.
A new Paramount Plus original docuseries.
We were dealing with a serial killer preying on elderly women.
A cold-blooded killer hidden in plain sight.
He's suffocating people with pillows.
Leaving corpses all over Texas.
How did it happen?
I was responsible for her. The guilt is immeasurable.
They covered it up.
Pillowcase Murders, now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Everyone is talking about If.
I'm going to go to limb here, but I like it. I love it.
It's original and heartfelt.
Ta-da!
And the must-see comedy of the summer that's perfect for the whole family.
This is just so exciting.
If, rated PG, now playing in theaters.
I'm assuming we're not going to do video, Zach, because you want people to see your haircut.
I don't really care. We're going to do video.
I mean, you wouldn't let me see a photo of it the other day. You wouldn't let Gappy send it to me. So
I hadn't really seen what the haircut looked like.
What do you mean?
At that point. Because like when they show you in the barbershop, it's like, I don't know, my hair was like wet. So it wasn't like how it is now.
Oh, so it looked better wet?
No, it looked worse.
Oh, it looked worse than it looks now.
Yeah, I mean, I also just woke up, so I'm not sure.
If you're up for a few hours and your hair's dry, look better than it looks now. I get it.
Yeah.
It looks like shit. All right, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to On the Bench. I'm your host for this episode, Brendan Sinone. I'm joined by Chris Nee and a newly, freshly cut Zach Blaustein. Welcome, gents, to the show. Okay, I was going to say Monday. It's Tuesday, isn't it?
It is Tuesday. It's still April, so you can't say happy May. So yeah, there you go.
It is. Now, Chris, when the month ends,
we're not doing this.
Do we lose a second? Chris is really questioning himself and the world.
Chris kept going on it and was actually making a lot of sense. And
23, 59, 59. Just saying.
Leap year made sense though. After that, I mean, I really think about a lot of things, put things in perspective. This episode of On the Bench is brought to you by Chattanooga Whiskey as well as the Turner Group. Chattanooga Whiskey is killing it in the craft distillery game. They do an exquisite job with all their whiskey entries, and their private selection stuff is really unique. And I would though recommend, if you're trying to get into whiskey and you've maybe had a couple of different samples elsewhere and you want to know where to go, their 111 is a affordable, higher proof whiskey, bourbon that is going to have a level of richness, complexity, yet somewhat smooth. And because it's proofed at 111, you can add water to it, you can add ice, kind of lower it down a little bit, and it kind of gives you this versatility of a really high-end whiskey. So Chattanooga whiskey is excellent. You can find them anywhere throughout the Southeast. And then if you have enough Chattanooga whiskey and you feel like buying a house, who would you guys turn to?
The Turner Group.
I saw another giant spider in my house the other day. I think it was black, and it went underneath the fireplace mantle area that was also black. So I didn't get a great look at it, but I saw something big moving fast, and now I can't find it. And the first sale sign is on the Sinone front yard, and the Turner Group is who's going to help us move and maybe just burn the whole house down too. And just we'll do a renovation project. But the Turner Group in Central Florida helps you out throughout the state of Florida, though, especially Tallahassee, Gainesville. They got people in major cities all over the place to be able to help you find whether you're trying to get kids a student and trying to find a way to not pay a ton of rent, maybe make some money long term. Turner Group can help you out with that. Or if you're just looking for your dream home, Colin Turner makes dreams happen. Sorry, Colin. All right, let's get into it, gents. There was a lot of good stuff for FSU this weekend as it pertains to the NFL draft. Really, as probably as good of a like weekend as possible for the Seminoles. You have 10 players drafted. That is one shy of a program record. And those program records were done in 2013 after the 2012 season, and then 2015 after the 2014 season. For those of you who are a little younger, Chris, let the people know like that 3-year stretch that FSU had between 2012 and in 2014 seasons, just how good the talent level was.
Yeah, the Jimbo Fisher hit rate was absurd. A good hit rate's over 50%. I think Jimbo was flirting with 75% there for a few years, and it showed on the field, and development was good, and super competitive groups, and kind of fueled each other to be really, really good. And I mean, truthfully, like doing NFL Noles over the last decade, so much of that group has been that group, and now they're starting to leave the league, retire, injure out. You know, a guy like Jameis is still hanging around, but a lot of them, PJ Williams, for example, is one who's now done, so on and so forth. It's kind of interesting seeing those numbers diminish, and this will be the first time FSU's really done a good job properly restocking the NFL ranks in recent years.
Yeah, we were going to lose NFL Noles potentially. Like, it was going to be like Jermaine Johnson, and that was
I think it was hanging around 20 last year. There's been years where it's been 40 plus. 40. So, yeah.
So this will help because you're going to have 10 plus some higher end undrafted free agents kind of re-enter it. And we'll get into like projecting ahead too, but like this, I don't want to say new normal to have double digits every year, but FSU being in the conversation for draftable players is going to be where it's going. And I think that shows where the program's at right now. Before we get into like some of the guys, where they went, fits, stuff like that, kids show, Zach, what was your favorite moment from the draft weekend for Florida State? And there were some really cool ones. Which one stands out to you?
It's got to be the Braden Fist, Jared Verse phone call.
Yeah.
That was emotional. I didn't really expect Fist to get emotional like that. Like he started tearing up once Verse got on the line, you know, right before they made the pick. I thought that was really cool that the Rams, you know, made that happen. Jared was explaining that he got to LA, got to his hotel, and they basically rushed him out of the hotel into a Sprinter van. He got into traffic. They rushed him upstairs into the facility and then got him on the phone. He's like, "Is this Fisk?" Then, yeah, that awesome moment happened. That was definitely the highlight, I think, of the entire, you know, draft weekend for me. Just seeing those two guys who, you know, only played together for a season. You know, to have that kind of connection, be reunited in LA, thought that was really cool.
They were the odd couple. Like Chris can attest to that. We'd see them at post-game interviews bickering almost like an old married couple, and to see them kind of reunited again, in the respect to hear them talk about each other's games and both mentioning hard work, and you know, that's music to Mike Norvell's ears, you know, thousands of miles away across the country. But then to even listen to like the Rams brass GM and Sean McVay.
Less Snead.
That's right. Did he have FSU ties?
Not to my knowledge, but okay. He does like FSU players.
He does. But to hear them talk about those two guys, their performance against Louisville, that seemed to be pretty captivating to them. And just even the way to talk about how FSU's coaching staff adjusted, how it used Braden Fisk in the middle of the year. Like there's just a lot of feel good, like long-term directional stuff based on that little snapshot. For you, Chris, let's talk about the Jordan Travis getting drafted at 171 overall, I think it was, in the fifth round. To the New York Jets. I went into the weekend not sure if Jordan would hear his name called. Apparently, he was close to hearing it called in the fourth round. The Jets said they thought they could wait around and get him, and that gamble proved out to be correct. But for you, covering that kid through the duration of his career, the ups, the downs, to see it kind of lead into that moment, what was that like, Nee?
I think the first comment from me was, I remember when the wind kicked his ass, and you know, to see him be an NFL draft pick, I'm extremely happy for him, for his family, definitely for his brother Devin, because I think Devin cares more than any other soul on earth about his brother Jordan. It was awesome, you know, it was good stuff. The Jets definitely liked him. They traded up actually for that pick in the fifth round, so it was pretty clear they wanted to get him. They had circled him. The Jermaine Johnson text that came out yesterday, I think via Instagram, was pretty cool. You know, Jordan, I think it was pro day. It might have been immediately before or after pro day here at FSU. He mentioned the Jets had shown him interest, that he had plans to go up there, I believe, and actually work out for them or at least meet with them. So it wasn't shocking that was the team. But I was extremely happy for him. That kid's self-made, busted his backside to become what he is, and now he gets an opportunity. He'll get to learn under a really, really talented quarterback in a franchise that seems to be going in the right direction, despite the fact I hate him passionately. I hate the Jets.
And the Jets move Zach Wilson to basically make room for Jordan Travis, yeah, too. Much to the delight of middle-aged moms in Denver. Zach Wilson, you move a second overall pick for you know, for to make room for Jordan Travis, which is cool. And kind of it's a great situation because he has that time to develop with Aaron Rodgers being QB1 and even Tyrod Taylor, just like a consummate pro, being quarterback too. Like Jordan has a full redshirt year, and then there's a clear path to playing time and in the next year or two, like if he develops correctly. It's as good a situation you can probably hope for a day three quarterback.
I enjoyed a lot of the phone calls. I thought Tatum Bethune's with the 49ers was great. He was super gracious and happy, and it was clear he and the linebacker coach for the 49ers had connected during his visit out there. Renardo Green's was great because it's so Renardo, just sort of like dry and like, I'm coming there to kill people. I'm a dog. Like that's just Renardo. He's been Wolverine since he was a high school kid to us.
He had like a George Pickens-esque reaction to him getting drafted. He just stood there like on his phone. Didn't react at all, and the rest of his family's like, hey, like get excited, dude, you just got drafted in the second round.
He is cut from a different cloth, man. He was
you got John Lynch vouching for you, and John Lynch saying, I talked to Derek Brooks, FSU alum, about this kid, and he basically gave a stamp of approval. Those are pretty good. Like Mel Kiper's panning the pick, and then you got John Lynch and Derek Brooks saying it's a great pick. I know which side of the aisle I'm gonna fall on, just saying here. Sorry, Mel. Great hair.
Hair is looking kind of mellish right now. Seeing all the different reactions, the different personalities. I mean, Jarian Jones going in the third round to the Jacksonville Jaguars is awesome. Keon Coleman. We haven't talked about Keon Coleman.
Yeah.
Just missing on the first round, but like his like the interviews with the jacket. Yeah, he's
become like a darling up there already.
Quickly. They're smitten by Keon Coleman. We've seen it though. And like, so I'm saying like all the personalities just makes you reflect on just how special this past year's team was. And I think it kind of, for me, brought up some of the, it's always going to be there, like what if, and that angst. But more than that now is as you transition, it's like, yes, like this all came together in a way that we can have really good memories of this team. And then I think more big picture guys, like the program's in a really good spot. And people can point to, they got transfers, and most of these guys were transfers. Yeah, but Jordan Travis got developed. He was.
Jarian Jones got developed. Renardo was homegrown.
Yeah, Tatum Bethune like getting drafted. Like he wouldn't. Brandon Fisk was.
I think probably Fisk and Verse will both tell you they became drastically better football players in their 2 and 1 year respectively at FSU, and certainly playing with one another mattered to them because it motivated one another to become better. And hey, who cares? We live in a portal era. Like at some point, the whole portal versus high school thing, it needs to die a death.
Well, yeah, the people who said that was high school over portal are now going to the portal pretty heavily. So,
you're trying to build your best possible football team. It's turned into what the NFL is, and the model is going to gravitate more and more towards the NFL direction. At some point, all the talking points of all that stuff, it's a waste of time.
And if you're a Florida State fan, I think you should be consider yourself fortunate that you had a head coach who was forward thinking and found a market inefficiency to capitalize on so early on. And that points to him probably being able to do that again and again, because he's been pretty forward thinking and how he builds his roster. So that's the big picture. Look at it to me. Real quick, the recap of it. Jared Verse goes 19th overall to the LA Rams. They talked about maybe using him outside linebacker a little bit in their scheme. I don't know if I love that, like him dropping into coverage.
Yeah, Sean McVay said that in the initial day one press conference. And then they spoke further about it when the draft wrapped. I don't think it's going to be a Warner situation where he's going to be fish out of water. I think he's going to be a rush end for the most part. They refer to him in some ways as an outside backer, yes.
Keon Coleman, 33rd overall to the Buffalo Bills. I mean, he is a chance. They have a major need at wide receiver after trading Stephon Diggs. There's going to be a chance for him to play a major role for a team with pretty high hopes in the playoffs. I remember thinking that I don't need Bills Mafia to get after me. I didn't think quarterback situation was great there a couple of years ago, and I was very, very wrong on that.
But I think Coleman and Josh Allen are made for one another.
Yeah, they ought to be a really good fit.
The freelancing, the basketball elements of Coleman's game, I think will play well with the backyard football Wyoming version of Josh Allen that sometimes makes an appearance.
LA Rams take Braden Fisk, 39th overall. They move up to go ahead and get him. There was a defensive tackle run happening, so you go ahead and get him. Basically, you replace Aaron Donald with Aaron Donald 2.0. I don't know how to describe it. Future Hall of Fame career. But no, for him and
And they also added Tyler Davis later in the draft, a name familiar to FSU fans and Clemson.
Oldie but a goodie.
Yeah, they completely rebuilt that defensive line over the last 2 years.
He was in the same recruiting class as next up, Renardo Green, who went 64th overall to the San Francisco 49ers. Fun little backstory there, just navel gazing. I do a little nerdy GM league in the offseason, and I was at San Francisco 49ers, and guess who I took in the second round about 3 weeks ago?
Renardo Green.
Yeah, I was like, all right, let's make it happen. Would you Miller Lite this early, Chris? That's crazy.
Diet Mountain Dew, buddy.
Ugh, even worse. Trey Benson goes 66 overall early on in the third round to the Arizona Cardinals. They have James Conner at running back, but there's a pretty clear path to playing time as Conner gets a little bit older, and you're taking a running back that early. You're expecting them to probably be a starting caliber player.
It's another dude. I think the Cardinals had 10 total picks. I think they took 5 offense, 5 defense. And, like, team and draft trends are always interesting to me, and the Cardinals seem to have, like, a specific plan. Like, if you look at how they are drafting in recent drafts, the last 2 drafts specifically.
Say draft one more time.
Draft.
They drafted Marvin Harrison Jr. in the first round and pairing him with, what's already in that receiving core. I think that's a good situation for Trey. Like, I think he's going to have an opportunity to really shine there. Not be obviously the feature back yet, but he'll have some ability to grow from a veteran like James Conner. So I think, I'm excited about that fit for him.
Mel Kiper gave them an A. Chris, there you go, your boy gave him an A.
Well, thank God we have his approval.
Well, we have Dollar Tree Mel Kiper on the podcast right now.
Is that me? Actually, they did have a really good draft. I'm looking at it right now. I like
they had some.
Max Melton, I like Darius Robinson. Ooh, Tejon Palmer in the 6th round. Sneaky pick, guys.
Xavier Thomas.
I had a long-standing bet with a buddy that Xavier Thomas would be a first-round draft pick. Now, this was made like 6 years ago. And now I finally had to pay it because just injuries and COVID.
He's a wild case of, like, man, he's got some great highlights. Like the explosiveness, Xavier Thomas of Clemson is who I'm referencing. Explosiveness, ability to get downhill, get off the edge, fire off, like everything you want at that position. But he goes MIA too often and just doesn't get enough reps and plays in a season. And that's why he lived the draft life he lived. He's an interesting one, though. He feels like a guy that can go to the NFL and actually have a much better NFL career than he ever had in college.
That happens sometimes. There's a handful of guys that do that every single year.
Yeah.
Right. Sweats was partly because of injury, but yeah.
Well,
that's
what I'm saying. Yeah.
So that's what he's trying to make that point, Chris.
Sweats injury shows a little more trash.
You need my point. Sorry.
Undercut his point. Jarren Jones. Third round pick, 96 overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars. As a Jags fan,
great phone call.
I like that. Yeah, another shocking that Jarren Jones would have a fun, entertaining moment, right? Like that he'd give you something memorable. No, that's a good pick for the Jags. There's a potential nickel corner there. I think their nickel corner is getting a little older. So, again, another path to playing time. Jordan Travis, 5th round to the New York Jets. Talked about that one already. Johnny Wilson, 6th round to the Philadelphia Eagles. If you listen to the pod preview show that we did with Coach AB and Clay last week, AB is obviously an Eagles fan from being up that way, and had mentioned that the Eagles were paying a lot of attention to Johnny Wilson. I think they had him in for one of their 30 visits. So not a surprise that he ends up in Philly. Him falling to the 6th round, interesting.
I think that was the biggest surprise of the draft. Him and I think that, and then Renardo getting picked in the 2nd round were the 2 biggest surprises for me. Cause I feel like these NFL scouting departments are always so big on, measurables and testing numbers. And I feel like Johnny is off the charts on both, right? Like, I mean, his measurables are ridiculous. I think he's got the longest wingspan, in NFL draft wide receiver history or whatever. And then, he's not slow. You're in a 4.51. I think some people think that's a knock on his game or something, just based on some conversations I've had. But like, I mean, the dude, we watched the dude, in practice every day and on game days for the past 2 seasons, he can move. So I thought that was surprising that he slid so all the way to the 6th round.
Yeah.
So Howie Roseman. super involved with the Eagles front office and the building of their football teams, called him unique and unusual. If you look at Howie Roseman's draft history in late rounds with the Eagles, he hits a lot. So
yeah, he goes after physical traits. Also, Howie Roseman,
not a tight end.
Not a tight end.
Not a tight end.
Worth noting that I think FSU has really liked a lot of the way Howie Roseman has built the Eagles and has used it in kind of the blue chip of like, or sorry, not the blueprint of how he puts together the defensive line and stuff. They took a lot of that out, you know, out of page from that book last year or so. Worth noting. Jaheim Bell, seventh round of New England Patriots. Yeah, I'm a big Drake May fan. Like, I thought his film was as fun as anyone, maybe other than Caleb Williams, who's kind of considered like a transcendent talent. Drake May, I know, had some ups and downs, but like, man, the ups are really, really fun for him. And I like what New England did in their draft surrounding him with playmakers and even like a Jaheim Bell in the seventh round. Like, typically you don't think a seventh round guy is going to have a chance to make a roster. I hope that New England's coaching staff allows Jaheim Bell to be Jaheim Bell in the sense of like, you're going to move him around, be creative. Seventh round pick makes me feel like that's not going to be a priority for them, but you know, we'll see what he does with training camp and an opportunity. Go ahead, Chris. You're a resident Patriots fan.
The whole household is, other than me. Well, the wife and my.
Oh, you're the Dolphins fan. That's right. And then everyone else.
Reading the official side of Patriots and like their draft breakdown, it was very direct on Jaheim. Not a particularly good blocker, a little bit undersized, but you move around, you get creative. When in-house media is writing that, that's coming from in-house people. Made me feel confident that the Pats at least drafted a tight end, knowing exactly that he's an H-back. Yeah, that he's not really like your traditional Travis Kelce get down the field tight end anymore.
Tatum Bethune goes 251st overall in the seventh round. That was fun. I didn't think Tatum would get drafted, but like I think if you're going in, you know, by the time you get to round six, round seven, especially this year's draft wasn't considered like great with the depth of it. It was more top heavy. Like, you want a guy who's either going to have something super unique, like a Johnny Wilson, or someone who's just really solid at everything, and see if they can help you out in special teams. I think Tatum Bethune is the latter on that, and that he does everything well. Maybe not elite in any one category. His relative athletic score, you know, testing kind of shows that too. It's above average. It's not fantastic. BFF stuff, same. Like, it's solid. But Tatum does everything well. Super professional, and that'll give him a chance to stick around on a roster. So those are your 10 players who got drafted. Fabian Lovett goes undrafted. Would imagine that was medicals at that point for him, just someone who's had multiple injuries in his career and a relatively shallow defensive tackle class, and had heard like some NFL teams really liked him. Clearly the Kansas City Chiefs did accept paying him over $100,000 in guaranteed money to take a flyer on him, which is really good for a UDFA. Kalen DeLoach goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, someone who I think has a chance to stick. Just based on special teams value, especially with the kickoff rules changing. And then finally, Akeem Dent lands with the Los Angeles Chargers. And there might be some good like depth chart stuff for him that would allow him to have an outside shot at it. So yeah, that's 10 players drafted, 13 get a chance with the NFL teams. And the program's in a really good spot. How many do we think get drafted next year? Move ahead, because you're talking about, oh, how do we want to define the season, Chris? Transition season, rebuild, reload? What does it feel like right now?
I don't feel like it's a rebuild. I don't feel like it's a reload either, because I don't think it's on par with last year at the top. It feels transition. It feels like confident and capable of competing, but also not like a surefire, no doubt, they should definitely win the ACC, which last year felt like a team that should definitely play for the ACC championship. And if it came together, win the ACC championship. And obviously it did that. I think I thought they'd go about 12-1. They went 13-0. So I don't feel that way about this year. I feel like this year is more of a 10-2 type ball club that can compete for the league. And because of the expanded playoffs, potentially compete for those. But transitional, I guess, is the best way. I'll put it this way. This portal period that we're currently in, that's, you know, the window for entry is about to close, and then obviously pieces will find homes. It has not felt like last year where it was adding a piece or two to put you over the top.
Yeah, I think it's very much so. Like, I think what you're playing for is to continue momentum, to not fall backwards, to keep establishing what you want as a program culturally, and then 2025 is, if things break right, an all-in sort of year for you, was the way that they recruited in the both prep ranks And then the transfer portal, they had so many multi-year guys.
There's also a degree of investment on homegrown in-house talent and some younger guys. For example, not really pursuing a tight end, I think speaks to you want to invest in Landon Thomas this year.
Linebacker would be another.
Hakeem Williams is another. If you do not ultimately go and get a receiver, then it has to be Hakeem Williams' time to do mm-hmm. more. And I think that has been conveyed in building to him. So there's a degree of that. And I don't think that's the worst thing. I'm not one that gets stuck on, oh, we're a transfer program or that or that. Like, those titles don't matter. But I think it is good to shed titles and show that you can be diverse and do it all. And I think there's a degree of that.
So with that in mind, let's call it a transitional season. I think I went through the roster, bounced ideas off of the young brains and Fink and Dane to get their thoughts on, you know, who's a draftable prospect next year. And I think like the low end of it is going to be like four. I think you're looking at four players: Josh Farmer, Daryl Jackson, Pat Payton, who early DraftKings odds have him like as a potential like first round pick, which probably not going to happen. But the fact that he's in that conversation is probably, you know, indicative of him being a draftable player. And I think the Rams GM who said that they had another defensive end who would have been drafted this year had he gone out. That's probably Pat Payton. And then who was, I can't remember the fourth one. It's been a few days since I wrote the article, and it was a really long weekend.
Josh Farmer.
I said that already.
DJU.
No, he's in the next tier for me.
AZ Thomas.
Yeah, AZ Thomas is the one. Thank you, Zach. It's AZ Thomas. Those are the four. And then you can get to the DJU ranks. Like, if he's solid this season, like, he's going to be a big toolsy quarterback that someone will take a late round pick on him, even if he's like above average to solid this year, right? Malik Benson's going to have a shot. Ventrell Cypress will have a shot at it. Like, we can go down the list here. And so, like, I think
Lundy, four, like, DJ Lundy would
be. DJ Lundy's, if the athleticism that we saw in the spring is as good as it was, he'll have a shot. Yeah, Zach mentioned Marvin Jones Jr. He's someone who was also mentioned in the DraftKings odds as a potential first overall pick. Again, unlikely. But
am I allowed to throw TJ Ferguson out there?
Yeah, sure. I think he's looked at as a multi-year guy, but there's tools there. That Darius Washington, like, playing five positions, and like, yeah, he's going to be an older prospect, but like, I think someone's going to probably really fall in love with the personality and the versatility there, and he's ascending for you. So that's all to say, four or five players getting drafted is reasonable. If it's six or seven, again, in a transition year, I think that's really special and would show where you're going as a program. So, like, again, just feels like it's in a good place right now. All right, quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk about transfer portal, roster development, attrition, no attrition. I don't know. We'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to On the Bench. The transfer portal is about to close. Is today the last day for players to put their name in?
Yeah, end of April is the last day for players end of May 1 is last day for grad transfers.
Yeah. And then names.
But there's also the compliance window of potentially 48 hours. So guys could still appear, you know, well, basically 2 days rule. After it closes. Yeah.
So. Through like Thursday or Friday is kind of like,
yeah, through Thursday.
Like I wish it was just a scroll that would say that, so we didn't have to always say it. But yeah, it's true.
I can put a scroll on here, you know.
It is so funny though. Like sometimes a player will enter the portal and like they just push them through right away, right? Like, and then sometimes it's a legit 48-hour period of it. So, anyways, as we kind of calibrate to like what has happened so far, what hasn't happened, what is to happen, FSU has lost Vandravius Jacobs to the transfer portal.
And Grady Vance.
And Grady Vance was a little older news, but that's it. And I know we're not supposed to count scholarships. I know they always work themselves out. I know. But when your program's on a scholarship restriction for the next 2 years due to some NCAA penalties that are no longer really enforceable, it's twice now FSU's gotten screwed by that kind of stuff in the last year, I'm going to count them. And we're at about 88, and no one has entered. And I don't know that there's this sense of urgency that players are going to enter. So they're going to have to make that work somehow. How? I don't know. Magic? Maybe? I don't know. Help me out, guys. I'm at a loss here. This is, my brain that tries to just follow trends doesn't understand what's happening right now.
Yeah. I'm just surprised. Go ahead, Zach.
I was just going to say, I don't think there's an internal worry about it is what I'll say.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we can freak out all we want about numbers and them being over, but I don't think internally they're worried at all about being over or anything like that. So I don't think there's a cause for panic.
So happy that they're all calm, cool, and collected. That's great.
Yeah. I'm just surprised a select few individuals.
And you're not on the staff.
Players, sorry, Chris. Players I'm talking about haven't kind of figured out that like the opportunity just isn't there for them, barring some extreme circumstances.
Yeah, they're usually like this issue doesn't really come up, right? I feel like when we hear of possible names going in the portal, they usually happen, and that didn't really happen.
They also usually make sense.
Yeah, and we noted that this window was going to be a little bit harder to for guys to leave because it was a little bit harder to find names that made sense. But there are a few, right? Like we mentioned. You know, some names in the receiver room could make sense, some of those older guys, and at a variety of other positions, but you know, none of those guys have entered to our knowledge or even, you know, submitted the paperwork necessary to enter. So
yeah. I mean, the two you lost, one was maturity issue in Dre, and maturity comes with age, and he's still a young player, so that's sort of just one of those things. And there were a few other maturity guys that were kind of in that line of maybe it could happen, but usually with those guys, for the most part, you don't want to lose them. You hope they do turn around and get better. I mean, you know, Jerry and Jones, who just got drafted, is a guy that you can probably point to as an old maturity issue. And he then became basically a team leader the last 2 years. Those things get better, usually with time and reps and experience around the coaching staff and continuity that this program has. Others are like Greedy Vance, where it's probably a bit of probably can get a better financial package somewhere else and a better role in the sense of being essentially a guaranteed starter than he possibly had at FSU. There's those. And then there's a third of you're sort of buried. Like you're on the depth chart and your opportunity to play is low to non-existent. And there's a couple of those that I'm just surprised haven't decided to exit stage left.
Name names, Chris.
I'm not naming names, but come on. People know who we're talking about.
They want us to always name names. I'm so interested in that. People always want to know who's getting fired, who's getting kicked off the team.
I thought there would be, we've had two transfers. I thought there would be at least 5 to 7.
Same.
So like we're 3 to 5 short of that number. And I'm not sure we're going to see 3 happen. So to get us to 5. So I'm surprised by that. Some of that I think is also you're not in a rush to force a guy out or push a guy out or motivate a guy to depart. If you don't have a replacement that you feel confident in the sense of what you're going to fill that number with. And some of that is they do have to get under the 85, but also like if they were to get to 81 or so and then climb back up, you know, we're going to get a little ahead of ourselves, shockingly, that I'm doing that. But really, other than D tackle, where have we seen them make any movement in this transfer portal window?
Let's transition to that, Chris. I think that's a good transition for once. It wasn't you jumping ahead. It was you just jumping to the next natural part of the conversation. Wide receiver, we talk about, you know, maybe expecting 3 to 4 guys to transfer out. You've seen one. I think some of it is market dependent, right? Like, there are several players who've entered the transfer portal at wide receiver who would help you, and several players who would help you on the field were ruled out, like just as character issues or just not a fit or whatever. And then was it Lambert Smith from Penn State? It was the one guy who was a target for a brief window.
Goes to Auburn.
And he goes, but even before he went to Auburn, I think they were kind of turned off by some things.
They got some bad reviews.
Yeah. And that's just been, well, Zach, like we talked about this, I think a week ago, that there was a lot of red flag type of stuff in this portal or just things that didn't make, you know, in the portal for a reason. It just has only continued that, right? Like every single player who enters, there's almost some deficiency at this point. It's not what it was a year ago.
Or the flip side at D tackle, where it's super expensive and you're not trying to spend that way because you're looking for a third, fourth guy in that room to make you better, to bolster it. You're already highly invested on your top line, financially speaking. So you're not about to go play the sweepstakes where it's going to cost you high level money. There's a reason Derek Harmon's leaning towards USC. Yeah, I mean, like, let's not play stupid with this. USC
rumored numbers of like almost $1 million, and before the like, FSU isn't going to restart, set the market crowd.
Taking a shot here. Miami's spending. We know Miami's spending. That's not me trying to be a smartass or anything. Miami can't get Derek Harmon in, so that kind of speaks to what you probably think USC is paying.
And Colorado, like, you could say whatever about Colorado. They are putting out crazy numbers. I don't know if they're actually paying those numbers, but they are offering ridiculous numbers in the portal right now. So like that is enticing. You know, Derek Harmon visited Colorado, you know, while he was on that West Coast swing to USC as well. I think those two schools are kind of going at it for Derek Harmon right now, which is kind of crazy to think, right? Like, but so they are both spending a ton of money in the portal, especially at that position.
But like, so the dynamic at defensive tackle that is interesting, we talked like that third defensive tackle is a essentially a starter for you the way FSU wants to use it, but not in title. So like the Miami transfer who FSU liked, Jared Harrison Hunt, goes to SMU, and Zach can report that it was like part of it, right, was he wanted to start.
Yeah, he wanted to start, or like, you know, the clear opportunity or path to starting.
And so that's part of what you're weighing. Let's say you want to get wild and go after a Derek Harmon, and FSU likes both Harmon and Barrow, like they should. Like
Michigan State kids, for those unfamiliar.
Those are two really high quality interior defenders, both various levels of NFL upside. Harmon particularly, I feel like is a potential, like we'll be talking about him in the NFL draft next year, like higher end guy. If the rumors are true of like USC or Colorado, if you're talking about close to $1 million in NIL, okay, you go ahead and let's say you find a way to get there. Well, then you have Josh Farmer and Daryl Jackson not making $1 million. How is that going to work in the locker room? Because those numbers get out real fast. So those are just, that's the constant balancing act. I think that's a program you're trying to weigh of like the cultural issues with it when money starts getting involved at such a high level. And then there's the aspect of trying to convince someone to come in and be your D tackle three. And even though you're playing starting level, it's still not as glamorous.
I'll play GM here for a moment. I'm certainly not fit like FSU's GM or anything like that. But there's also the element of like, you like your room. You like Josh and Daryl at 1-2. You got Grady Kelly, who's a dependable veteran. You like KJ Sampson as a guy who's elevating. You like Daniel Lyons as a potential guy who has flashes, but obviously needs to be more consistent. That gives you 5 in that room. It's not as though your whole castle is going to crumble if you don't add to that room. The goal in adding to that room is basically fortifying a strength, something that we wrote a great deal about last year in this portion of the cycle when FSU went and did that, where they made themselves better at positions by adding quality depth. Last year definitely felt more all in, like Ole Miss has been this year, USC defensively has been this year. FSU has not felt that way this year in the portal, at least to me. They have felt to me this year that it's about putting together a really good product to compete at a high level and let the ships fall where they may. But they're also, again, I feel, investing in young talent. Like the lack of any interest in a tight end to me speaks directly more to Landon Thomas and Kyle Moorlach.
Well, even the guys you're getting in the portal are generally like most of these aren't. Last year was you knew you were bringing in Shaheen Bell for probably having him for one season, right? Mm-hmm. This year, over Keon Coleman, you knew you're bringing him in for 6 months, like
5 months, baby.
an Earl Little Jr. is someone that you think you can have for 2 years and develop the hell out of him, and he can be just a badass nickel in the next couple of years. And it could be good this year and just develop into it. Marvin Jones Jr., he's getting first-round buzz right now. He was brought in as a guy you thought you were going to probably have for 2 years. Tomiwa Adorijaye, same thing, multiple years. Like, yeah, there's a couple like a Sione Lolohea is going to be a one-year guy. Richie Leonard, a one-year guy. But then you have like a Terrence Ferguson and Jake, is it Rizzi or Rizzo?
Rizzi.
Combining Ryan Izzo. But you have him for who's going to be a multi-year guy. So point being is like most of these guys are multi-year guys. I think that speaks to your point, Chris, is you're not trying to hurry to add pieces who are going to be one-year guys if they don't make a ton of sense, because you're building it long-term and you're developing at this point.
Are we surprised how this portal period has played out, not even just from an FSU perspective, nationally?
Yes. Zach's...
You're not Zach.
Well, I remember we got on here and we talked about the expectation of the portal window. And I told you guys it was not going to be as crazy.
There is no way you thought it would be this dry. There's no way,
dude.
There's a distance between crazy and boring as hell. And this has been boring.
This has been boring.
Here's nothing. What I said. Okay, I'll give you that. Maybe I didn't think it was going to be this
lackluster. That was my point. That's what I'm surprised
with. But I also said that the spring window gets hyped up every single year.
Yes, agree with
beforehand.
That.
And I said it wasn't going to be as crazy. You thought that there were going to be a ton of guys that left their programs after 4 months of being on campus.
Yeah, and there were.
There's actually been a decent amount of those.
There have been like five notable ones.
Okay, but like good ones. And it was at Louisville. And that was my point, was I just thought it'd be at different programs would have some of that. Louisville did. Okay.
Then you have Xander Mella, who's another one. The kid at Bama is another one.
FSU had one transfer out since the portal period opened. You didn't think that was like...
Oh, yeah, that's been the most surprising thing too.
Part of it, like, no one's moving. It's like this game of musical chairs and no one's really jumped in to play.
Yeah. I mean, but like those types of when I was talking about as the high-end players, that's what I was referring to. But I think if you're talking about guys like on FSU's roster that are moving out, I mean, obviously those aren't going to be really high-end players. I mean, I will say one thing that I was pleasantly surprised with for Florida State's sake is that they didn't have any like crazy situation they had to deal with retaining a player.
Yeah, that's nice.
Which was a pleasant surprise that we didn't have to cover that. But I will say, yeah, you're right. The high end players, you know, they're not a lot of them. There's not a lot of them, you know, at a variety of positions. I mean, like for instance, at receiver, like FSU. If there was a quality receiver that didn't have like character concerns, they would be all in. But like the guy that
big entered, receiver, quality big receiver. I disagree.
Yeah. I think
James Draper. What's a 9 wide receiver? Come on down, tell us,
Chris. Please don't tell me you're.
I'm not obsessed with it like Dane. I'm just saying. I think the preference is big. I don't think they're in a market for a slot body type, despite losing Destin potentially.
I think they would be. I mean, what is Keandre Lambert Smith? I don't think he's all that tall. But
it's about, Dane would say it's about someone who can get open in one-on-one.
He has to be long.
What's his wrist size? But the defensive tackle market has, like, there's multiple NFL draft picks in that market. There's not a ton of depth to it. There's like four or five at the top of that market. The UCLA kid, I'm blanking on his name right now. He went back to UCLA.
After visiting Texas.
Yeah, and then the Louisville kid who's been hurt a lot of his career and hasn't produced, but when he's been healthy has been good. Went to OU, I believe.
And I heard he got good money to go there.
Yeah. And so
I think the market also forces, like, oversaturation of the market creates where schools are pushing kids out because they want to get involved with people in the market. And I don't think that's happened, where you have that kind of ping pong effect. Yeah, across the board at positions.
All right. So going big picture, let's get super minutiae real quick. There is at least one defensive tackle target for FSU that is probably in the realistic realm. Like the Michigan State guys could still develop in the next week or so. Right now, no visits set or anything like that. There's been discussions for it to be next week, right, Zach? But those haven't been.
Derek Harmon is not a realistic guy. Simeon Barrow, he still talks to FSU, and FSU is still in contact with him in his camp. They would try, you know, if they if all works out, they try to get him in for an OB after he visits Miami, I believe yesterday and today. I think he departs Miami tomorrow. So they might try for like a late week / weekend visit for Simeon Barro, but that nothing has been said on that front. But yeah, you can introduce the other maybe more realistic D-line target.
Yeah, so this is a newer name and someone who's taken a couple of official visits so far to Wisconsin and Arkansas, so Power Four programs, and that is Division II defensive tackle Javier Suggs out of Grand Valley State, which is up in, I guess, northern western Michigan. It's by one of the big lakes.
I mean, it's in Grand Valley, clearly.
Oh, it's Grand. Did I say Grand Valley? I did, right? Is it Grand Rapids?
Grand Rapids is where, isn't that where Brian Kelly began his coaching career?
I have no idea.
I think it is.
Hang on. That was a great, yes, you're correct. Grand Valley is where Brian Kelly began his coaching career.
Synergy.
Wow. So this guy was coached under Brian Kelly?
No. Well, I mean, he's been in college a long time.
Brian Kelly's 62 years old.
Is he really? Jesus.
Yeah.
He's just gotten his ass whipped by Mike Norvell every single year for the last 4 years, some way or another. Javier Suggs, let's talk about him, Zach.
Yeah, he's a Division II transfer that has picked up, like you said, solid P4 interest, visited Arkansas this past weekend, is going to head to Wisconsin and Kentucky this week before visiting Florida State on Thursday and Friday, from what I've been told. And it sounds like Michigan State will be the last visit of this kind of window for him on Sunday. He had a really nice 2023 season, 21 tackles, 7.5 TFLs, 5 sacks, 4 passes defended, and 1 forced fumble. He is a guy that, you know, has kind of emerged for FSU because I think he kind of fits what they're looking for, like Chris mentioned before, as kind of a D-tackle 3 or D-tackle 4, whatever you want to call it. Like not a guy that you really expect to bring in and start for you, which is not what FSU is looking for, but a guy that can be a nice rotational piece and provide some rest for some of those, you know, starter types like Josh Farmer and Daryl Jackson. So, yeah, I'm interested to see kind of how his visit goes. I mean, FSU is probably the most premier program involved with him of the, you know, schools I listed that he's taking visits to, but we'll see just how, you know, invested FSU is in trying to add him. I know that they're intrigued by his film, so we'll kind of see what the returns are after he makes it to campus later this week.
He was an old DN outside linebacker in high school who became an interior guy in college. Hustle is the name of his game. It's definitely the component I think probably appeals most to FSU.
Yeah, he went from 6'2", 250 as a recruit to where he's now 6'4", 290-ish. FSU likes his length. They like the effort, Chris mentioned. You watch his tape, and like there's legit like foot speed and quickness and jump off the ball. Lateral mobility is good. I'm trying to think of the right way to say this. He didn't captivate me in the sense, like, I don't think he dominated. And I had got stuck watching a couple full games because, like, there weren't cut-ups of him available in highlights. And I tried to watch full games. And so I had to watch and fast-forward through a lot of, like, local Sagawa roofing or Tony's Pizza commercials to watch him. And I just felt like if you're looking at someone at the Division II level to come and play the caliber of football that you want at Florida State, where you're at now as a top 10 program, it needs to be just pure dominance. And he wins a lot of reps. Like, don't get me wrong. He should be a Power Four level recruit at this point. But is he a top 10 program contributor? And the variables is like, he's been at a Division II program for the last 4 or 5 years. How would he develop with this strength program, right? And I think that's what FSU is looking at. He's got 2 years of eligibility. They like the size. They like the footwork. He seems to care. And so you're trying to project it out. I guess I just wouldn't look at it as like this instant day one impact guy. I could be wrong on that. He could come to camp and if he comes to Florida State, come to campus and be awesome in camp. It just didn't knock my socks off, I guess, when I watched him. I see the appeal. I just didn't love it. Fabian, love it. That's what he's supposed to come in and be. Get it? Cool. Anything else we want to talk about, guys, before we wrap things up?
FSU's kind of flirting with the idea of adding a linebacker in the portal. I don't know of it to be a certainty at this point, but
Cam Does Riley, that excite you, Zach?
It excites me to a great degree. Cam Riley is an Auburn linebacker transfer that FSU brought in for an unofficial visit, if you remember, in February. But they did not pursue him like heavily to the point where they were trying to add him at that point in time. He committed to NC State because they were the other contender. But as of this last week, he reopened his recruitment, decommitting from NC State. And I've been told that FSU's been in kind of constant communication with Cam Riley over the past week or two. I think this comes down to numbers for Florida State. If they have room to add someone, I think they, could explore it. And if FSU pursues him to the point where they do want to add him, like he's a take, I think they'd be tough to beat. But if not, he'll probably go to UCF, would be my guess. The Fighting Sinones.
Guys, this just in. Bishop Thomas back on the transfer market.
Ooh.
Where was he? From Colorado? Yeah, it's from Colorado. But he got booted at Colorado, didn't he?
Yeah. Should we do a revisit how the Colorado transfers worked for all the Florida State guys?
Duke Cooper's back in the portal, but he actually started at Colorado, so let's not act like he didn't go there and didn't accomplish anything.
Derek McClendon.
Yeah, he ended up with the Panthers as an undrafted free agent, I believe.
Good for DMAC. He's from North Carolina initially. No, Georgia.
No, he's Georgia. He's Georgia.
I'm
sorry.
He was recruited by NC State.
He's from Georgia.
Brendan Gant, how did Brendan Gant do?
Looking it up. I don't know if he's still on the team. Him and Travis J were like suspended for a good amount of the season, I think.
Yeah, he played two games. Travis J.
There haven't been a whole lot of portal outs from FSU that have come back to haunt them.
Yeah, I did. I've done my stories during the season where I track kind of how they do, how the portal departures perform at their new schools. There have really not been many guys, if at all, that have done, performed better than their situation at when they were at FSU.
Maybe that's why we're not seeing a lot of transfers out right now.
Yeah, because I mean, you look at a lot of these guys, especially this past season, man. Like I was following along with it, and like, even like a guy like Trayshon Ward, like he goes to Kansas State and like, had similar production to what he did.
Durability was still an issue.
Yeah, durability, but we had thought that he was looking for a bigger role, but I'm pretty sure that the other back in that backfield had more production than him. So,
and they just went and got Dylan Edwards, which I think is a hell of a good pickup for K-State. Colorado running back.
And Trayshon Ward's now at Boston College. So,
right.
Interested to see. But a lot of those guys that left, to be fair, last year were younger guys. So they still have time to kind of develop and see where they go. But yeah, there have not been many portal success stories of guys that exit FSU's program and then go, perform better elsewhere.
I was more trying to take a shot at Colorado than the players who left here, for what it's worth.
Yeah, I'm hearing everything's going great there. There's no issues at all.
It'll be a really fun team because they are really invested. They're actually building a nice little defensive line. That'll be one of the more – there's going to be so many fun teams to follow this year just from a combustibility standpoint of like boom or bust of what it could be, like Colorado, Miami. Miami might have the most expensive roster in college football this year. With one of the easiest schedules. So, like, the.
I feel like USC is trying to compete with that, with what they're doing defensively.
Yeah, USC. And there's.
But I guess some of that's also 2025 recruits. So,
yeah, but there's a combustibility rate to USC that's also kind of fun with what they're doing in the portal. Ole Miss has kind of gone all in already. So, there will be teams that ascend and teams I think that fall from grace pretty quickly. Even if they were never quite at grace. But, it'll be interesting to see how the big spenders end up doing this season. It's one way to do it. It's not always the best way to do it.
I feel like the portal era has created the ability to go bad to good, good to bad faster than ever before.
Very quickly. And FSU, I think, to tie it back there, just you want to keep being competitive at a pretty high level, 9-10 wins. They'll never say that, right? Like, they are going to aspire to win the conference again. But If you win 9 or 10 games and if you exceed that, you feel really good about what you've done this season. All right. Anything else, guys? We good?
We're good.
Okay. Isn't great.
I'm sorry. I in my head, basketball portal popped in there, but then
God,
I didn't want to cry on here. So sorry.
How many scholarship players do they currently have right now?
2 returning, 3 coming in from the high school JUCO ranks, right? Or maybe it's 4 now. I think it's 4 now because of the JUCO commitment. 1 portal commitment. So that's what, 7? We're at 7. I'll be dropping some news today of another visitor for Hoops.
Ooh.
I'll do that when we wrap this show up. So.
Okay,
they'll get there. I am looking at it in the spectrum of, can they build a good enough team to play games and, you know, win 10 to 15, which is what I'm kind of expecting from them. I know it's sad. I'm not expecting the 11 to 13 deep basketball teams that we've grown accustomed to under Leonard Hamilton. I just don't think they're going to get to that number. And if they do, I don't know how they're going to get to that number.
How are they even going
to? I don't know. I mean, there's so many guys in the basketball portal. It's over 1,000. So you can go find some dudes, but like, I don't know if you find enough dudes that help you win games. So. Got to laugh to keep from crying, boys.
Exciting.
Last thing before we get out of here, we had our promo for the spring transfer portal window. And while it hasn't been super active, I feel like we've covered it pretty darn well. And thank you. We had a good amount of turnout for that. People trying us out or upping to annual subscription. So I appreciate you guys giving us a try who did, you know, we're new here. And then obviously our long-term subscribers who've been here since longer than I've been here. Thank you for your patronage and continuing to spread the good word about the work that we try to do at Knowles247/on the bench. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for partaking to the gentleman I'm looking at in the Zoom call right now. We'll talk to you guys later. That's a cheers from Chris with his Diet Mountain Dew. That's disgusting. Sticking the landing. Bye.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV, the CBS Sports app, and streaming on Paramount+.